Hello, I'm Muriel, and I love true crime.
I'm Nick, and I am not a fan.
Thank you for joining us. Each week, I force Nick to listen to me tell him a story of a true crime. Welcome to Muriel's Murders. Today, we bring you part three of our five-part series on the Palmyra murders. This episode, Malcolm Graham III and his wife, Eleanor Laverne Eddington, a.k.a. Mac and Muff, join the crowd on Palmyra. A social hierarchy among the Yachties begins to emerge, and Buck and Stephanie ironically begin to realize relying on a couple of doobie-smoking hippies to bring them supplies on time might have been a mistake. This series is based on the excellent book And the Sea Will Tell by Vincent Bugliosi.
For a guy who's never read Lord of the Flies, I love some, you know, deserted island politicking. I'm so into it.
That's awesome.
This is going to be great.
Okay, cool. Well, you're going to like this next episode.
All right, here we go. But first, a big welcome goes out to Art B and Cameron for joining the party over at Muriel's Murders Patreon. We can't express our gratitude enough. And to anyone listening, yes, that means you listening right now. If you like what we do and you can afford $5 a month, it means the world to us that you log in, sign up, and support our show.
Nice, Nick.
Hell yeah.
All right. This is a true story involving murder, violence, drugs, adult themes, etc. So if any listeners are like Nick and they don't want to hear about those kind of things, go listen to a different podcast.
We're going to joke. We're going to curse. So if you don't like that kind of thing, go listen to a different podcast or maybe some music or a TV show. Realize that we're not so bad and come crawling back to us because you actually love our sensibility.
All right, Nikki, are you ready to hear this story?
No.
Okay. Hey, let's get started.
I did love how you ended the last one with this, with the mayor's sideburns ruffling in the wind and just looking out at this absolute clown show. The least deserted island in the history of atolls.
It's fun to read books and then just like think about what somebody's thinking.
You're the best. Okay, I love this. All right.
All right, ready? So yes. We left off last episode with Buck and Stephanie crash landing on Palmyra after a month of wildly flailing across the Pacific Ocean. There, instead of finding their own private tropical island, they found themselves at the center of a revolving stream of yachties, boaters who all came to Palmyra expecting a deserted island and instead got a makeshift yacht club filled with politely agitated Gilligan Island characters.
Hey, is yachty a real word or are you just saying it?
I Vincent Bugliosi uses the term the book, and I've seen it like on blogs.
Sure,
but
okay.
I just think it's a funny term. So
yeah,
it's
great.
I use that,
but I'm going to go ahead and say that's enough to consider it a real word.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It does not respond well to autocorrect on the spelling. So yeah. I think technically it's not a real word.
Okay. Okay.
Upon Buck and Stephanie's arrival, Jack Wheeler, the self-proclaimed mayor of Palmyra, and a boat full of ham radio fanatics on a cruise had already set up camp in the lagoon. And then, just a few days later, Malcolm Graham III and his wife, Eleanor Laverne Eddington, a.k.a. Mac and Muff.
It's the best. That's the best thing.
Came gliding into the lagoon on their magnificent yacht, the Sea Wind, a head-turner of a boat helmed by a 40-something couple with years of blue water sailing under their belts who worked flawlessly as a sailing team like majestic, choreographed boat dancers. So Mac was one of those yachties with sailing in his blood. He grew up sailing on the weekends with his dad in New England. But for Mac, that wasn't enough. He wanted all sailing all the time, a sailing bonanza. Mac did a couple of years in college, but land life felt like a prison, and he wiggled away as soon as he could to the West Coast and the sailor's life.
I feel like he's not going to survive this. I really don't know who's going to die at this point.
So Mac's family wasn't mega rich or anything, but well off enough for Mac to start his life with a $120,000 trust fund that paid out a small annual amount. And Mac just took odd jobs on docks and marinas until he received a $100,000 inheritance from his late uncle when he was in his late 20s. So he used that money to purchase his first love in 1960 for $20,000. That would be the Sea Wind. Mm. And, you know, I mean, we talked about it in last episode. I don't really know how to talk about yachts.
Yeah.
Really nice, beautiful, classic yachty's yacht. Right?
And also the envy of all, because he actually is really good at yachting. So it's really custom fitted
yes.
to survive and thrive out on the open ocean.
Yeah, exactly. Right. One of the descriptions they say about it that is a bonus, so maybe mm-hmm. this would help, is that it looks like it was carved out of a single block of wood. That's how like perfectly crafted it is.
Oh, so. See, that to me, that would make it sound crappy.
Me too.
It's like, oh, you just took a tree and made a boat out of a tree? Like, you should have like a lot of trees.
A lot of this is counterintuitive. For me, I keep having to like, I have to Google everything.
Yeah, give me like, you know, I don't know, a couple thousand branches at least to make a boat.
I think your ideal boat would just be so crazy.
My
just
ideal
look like
boat.
A Kraken.
Like. No, my ideal boat would be like a, you know, Chevelle from the 60s or 70s. You
I
know
feel
what
like
I mean?
It would be a warship, like something you could mm-hmm. be on and no whale could attack you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, with some laser guns.
So Mac invested the rest of this inheritance, and between the passive income from his investments and the trust and then cobbling together a bunch of odd boat-related jobs he never kept too long, Mac was able to live his dream, freaking sailing around the world, kicking it with other yachties, developing himself into a world-class mega sailor, you know, like
cool.
the monster of all sailors.
Okay.
So Mac met Muff in 1961 in San Diego, just mm-hmm. a year after getting his boat. Muff was a gorgeous, petite, blonde, a pinup model type with a really reserved, quiet personality. She was much less gregarious than Mac, but still warm and funny in her own way. They were both a very endearing couple.
Okay.
And she was a good counterpoint to his sort of like, hey, buddy, you know, slap you on the back. Good times.
This sounds like a very prime example of sort of heteronormative upper middle class people from that era.
Yeah. 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 Big Nixon heads. It was good.
Big Nixon heads.
So in 1962, Mac and Muff were engaged, but there was a snag.
Uh-oh.
Mac's number one thing was always going to be sailing. He was mm-hmm. literally that guy from that classic yacht rock song, Brandy, which by the way.
Yeah.
I'm making a yacht rock playlist for this series, and we will be putting it on Spotify.
Okay, great. You can find that link in the show notes. Didn't know about it till just now.
I've been curating it as I've been listening, writing this series, yeah. trying to really get into the zone.
Gotcha.
It's all 70s rock yacht.
Hell
yacht
yeah.
Rot. What?
Yacht. I don't know. Just
yacht
keep going.
Rock.
I think you said it right the first time.
Cool. So Mac had spent the past 2 years mm-hmm. completely gutting and remodeling the Sea Wind by hand, and he was planning a years-long cruise around the world. This was Mac's Mount Everest, a lifelong goal, and frankly, it was going to be really hard and dangerous. Remember Buck and Stephanie's harrowing sail to Palmyra?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? That's what we talked about last episode.
I remember.
In relatively good weather.
Yes.
Well, we're talking like that, uh-huh. right? Over the course of years in all seasons, in all ports, right?
Right.
There were going to be typhoons and violent modern day pirates. Navigation would be super hairy. Mac was boning up on using celestial navigation like a fancy old timey Magellan.
Uh-huh.
But he wasn't 100% confident in any of it. He wasn't confident it was going to work out at all in the end. I mean, the threat of dying at sea was part of the fun. Put a little stank on it, right? Because of all this, Mac decided after he was engaged to Muff to leave his fiance safe but lonely at home and instead hire a two-man crew for the cruise. So Google says the typical route to sail around the world is along the equator from east to west. So these are powerful winds that whip around the equator where the doldrums are. Remember, we were learning.
So there's either no wind or very powerful, violent wind. Yeah. Great. Classic equator personality, you know?
Those things are called the trade winds, and they typically flow in an east to west direction. So for a sailboat, capitalizing on these winds was the way to go. That's typically, you don't want to sail upwind the entire way around the world because that would be pretty stupid.
Okay.
So the plan was to sail south from California past Mexico, and then you kind of slip through, I believe,
Panama Canal.
Yes. And then continue east until they came all the way around past Australia to the island of Tahiti in the South Pacific. And if Mac made it to Tahiti, Muff would fly out. They would marry on the island and finish the 6,500-mile open ocean journey back to San Diego together as man and wife. The last leg of the trip would double as their honeymoon, which they would share crammed in the little cabin on the Seawind with Mac's two crew members. Maybe not a super awesome honeymoon for a regular old land person like Muff or Muriel.
Yes, or Nick or anyone who doesn't just want to do whatever the hell Mac wants to do.
Right, but that was kind of the way they did things, uncompromisingly sailing forward. Muff didn't love sailing, but she loved Mac, and Mac kind of loved sailing first and then Muff. So they spent their lives in a sandwich. Sailing is the meat, uh-huh, and Mac and Muff the slices of bread. So
how could you love Mac and also not love sailing? I just feel like that's you. I just,
nobody knows. The heart wants what it wants, man.
Sure, that's right.
Love,
okay,
they always say love's stupid and blind. Stupid idiot. Love's hard. Why do we do it? Nobody knows. Mac.
What is wrong with you right now?
I'm having a day. Mac.
Everyone should know we're not fighting. I think Muriel does love me still.
I do love you.
Okay,
but
good.
It's very easy to love you.
I don't.
If you were a sailor and you were like, you know, your honeymoon's going to be this weird thing, I would be like, yeah, you know, maybe we'll just be boyfriend and girlfriend. Okay, Mac left Muff in San Diego and sailed off to live his dreams. But days into the journey, they hit a catastrophic storm just off of Baja California. The storm raged for 11 days. It sunk a bunch of ships. It was like a huge, crazy storm. But the Seawind survived, and Mac managed to get his bashed up boat to a harbor. The crew that he had hired totally freaked out and quit, and the boat was so damaged that Mac couldn't continue on. He needed specific parts he could only get back in San Diego. So it was like, uh-huh, that sucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Muff filled Mac's wish list and traveled down to La Paz with a sack of boat parts to rescue her man. Mac and Muff got married in La Paz and decided to make the trip around the world together.
Mac gets what he wants, man.
And that trip would last the next 6 years.
God damn.
They survived more deadly storms, had terrifying encounters with murderous pirates off the coast of Morocco.
Really?
Yeah. They were sailing through a part of this ocean where people were just getting brutalized by pirates. They were boarding these, mm-hmm, like cruising vessels and just murdering everyone on board and taking all their stuff.
Oh, damn.
And he was, I mean, basically, I think he was just sailing and he heard out of nowhere a motor, and it was just black. You couldn't see anything. And yeah, he heard the motor of a really big ship. So he turned on the lights on his mast and saw that there was just this giant ship heading straight for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did a bunch of maneuvering and crazy stuff and shot at the boat with a handgun, and it ended up working. They didn't get boarded, but it was like very, very close.
Man, that sounds like a pretty good little side murder podcast.
Pirates?
Yeah, the pirates of Morocco? That's fucking crazy.
You know, I know people know this, but yeah. I always forget. There's a lot of pirates. Like, that's yeah. legit. They're yeah. still totally around and yeah. doing their thing, and they're super brutal. Anyway, they survived the pirates, and they saw the world together for 6 years.
You don't see the world. You see a lot of ocean and a couple of docks.
Well, we know who's not a big sailing guy, huh?
I'm taking a bus around the world.
Put
me on a Greyhound.
You are so great.
Next stop, Egypt.
You and Henry Lee Lucas just taking the Greyhound bus to Japan. All right. The summer of 1974, Mac was 43 and totally in his prime. He was like 5'10", square and stocky, tan, cheerful, warm and helpful. A lifelong sailor working odd jobs on the marina in San Diego and preparing for a 2-year cruise through the tropics with his brilliant wife. Mm-hmm. Mac's plan was to sail to a deserted tropical atoll called Palmyra and live there for 6 months to a year, and then continue on an easy tour of the islands in the South Pacific for the next year or so. So that would include Tahiti and stuff like that. Mac was the kind of happy that you can only get when you know what you want. Go out and get it. And it turns out it was actually as good as you thought it would be. So, like, mm-hmm. I'm one in a million. Like,
right. Yeah.
For her part, Muff was doing just okay. She was a solid medium. The 6-year honeymoon cruise had not been kind to her. She was kind of like our cat Bongo when we take him on a road trip. So it's like Bongo tolerates it, but he's always on a spectrum of terror. Uh-huh. And it never occurs to him that we're the ones terrorizing him. He's very sweet the entire time, like yeah. thinking we're all in this boat together, this yeah. hellish situation.
How did this happen to us?
So Muff didn't quit or fall apart on the honeymoon cruise, but the whole trip was more of a nerve jangler for her than a conversion to a lifelong love of sailing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mac and Muff never had any kids together or a house or anything. Sailing took priority over that. Muff was fine with being child-free, but left her own devices. She probably would have wanted to raise a family. So it wasn't like a huge sacrifice, but it was something that maybe she would have done.
Yeah, it seems like everything is just sort of like, curving in Mac's direction.
Yeah. At 41, Muff had gained a little weight. Mac was still head over heels with her and couldn't care less about the weight, but she was pretty notorious for ticking through fad diets. Her current diet du jour was chugging apple cider vinegar every morning, which really, those 1970s fat diets, they're like, reset your metabolism by drinking a bunch of vinegar. Psychos. Now that the tropics trip was looming, mm-hmm. Muff was becoming a little bit undone. She wasn't sleeping. Her nerves were shot. She started using tranquilizers to get through the day. Muff told friends she kind of thought they were going to die this time.
Uh-huh.
She even took her valuables and family heirlooms to her friend's house with instructions on how they were to be divided up when she and Mac didn't come home.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's
a lot.
Really intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not just like, I kind of think I'm going to die. It's like, I'm definitely planning on dying.
Yeah, she even, to calm her worries, she went to a psychic who unfortunately also thought Muff was going to die.
Oh, God.
At sea. So it felt very heavy, and a lot of people, you know, were witness to it.
Damn.
And again, they're caught in the sandwich thing. Muff didn't want to go on this cruise, but she didn't want to stay behind in San Diego without her man. And Mac was fine with Muff staying behind and wasn't forcing the issue, but he wasn't going to cancel the trip. That
right.
was not on the table. So Muff kept going. She fulfilled her part in the ritual of preparing for a cruise, meticulously shopping and packing the provisions, including 6 gallons of apple cider vinegar.
A lot of tranquilizers.
Mac promised the tropics trip would be nothing like the 6-year cruise. He was like, it's going to be slower, easier, and as soon as we get to Palmyra, you're going to settle down and start enjoying yourself.
Well, and also, crucially, it's 2 years instead of 6.
Yeah, right. And it doesn't have the same hardcore itinerary. Like, they're talking about basically like float, like going and like lying on a tropical island. You know, it's not the same.
Yeah. Still 2 years, man. I'll go on a trip like we're like, okay, you know, we're going to sail along the coast. You can see where we are. That's the coast there. You know, I'm not like, I won't like not be on a boat, but being on a boat that you, that I have to make sure happens and not sink or something. And that's just where you live. No, thank you. I really don't like it.
That's a big reason why I chose this story. I just thought one way or another, I think you were really going to relate to it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In early May 1974, Mac and Muff left San Diego for Hawaii. They started in rough pitching seas with waves knocking the boat around.
God, he just promised her it was going to be chill.
Well, that's what she said, too. She was like, what is going on? It was like knocking the boat hard enough to like send pots flying off the stove and across the cabin. It was really drastic.
Oh, God.
But ultimately, after that, it was a brilliant sail. 2,000 uneventful miles in 18 days, landing on the Big Island of Hawaii on May 25th, 1974, and then docking in Radar Bay. The plan was to stay in Hawaii for about a month until they had a full moon for the sailing trip to Palmyra.
Are you going to be Magellan and explain why a full moon matters?
Just because you have light. When you're out there in the middle of nowhere, it's just, mm-hmm. you can't see anything. It's pitch black. So a new moon really can mean you just feel like you're floating in outer space.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Cool, right. And deadly.
Yeah. But still, that's better. No, actually, what am I talking about? Outer space sounds horrible. That sounds cool for like a night.
I was really surprised by your answer just now. I was like, you would hate that.
No, like any of this would be cool for like a night in which the survival is not dependent on my skills.
Yeah, right. I got it. Okay. So they're docked in Radar Bay, and it just so happened they had docked right next to a 50-something-year-old telephone repairman named Curtis Shoemaker and his wife, Momi. And they all became really fast friends, often visiting each other's boats, taking day trips together. They were thick as thieves. And Shoemaker, of course, was super impressed with Mac's setup. He said they had a whole pharmacy worth of first aid stuff and medications on board the Sea Wind, basically enough tools to stock an entire boat repair shop, an arsenal of guns to ward off pirates. They had an electric generator, a permanent reference library for sailors, and then a whole outfitted kitchen with refrigeration and a whole year's worth of food.
Wow.
Shoemaker also noticed Mac's top-of-the-line ship-to-shore radio. Unlike Buck and Stephanie, Mac opted to buy both flour, sugar, and a lifeline to the outside world. So Shoemaker was also a big ham radio nerd. So, surprise, I don't know anything about ham radios, but from what I understand, Mac couldn't use the ship-to-shore radio to, like, call the phone at his mom's house, right? He had to communicate with a compatible device.
Sure.
And Curtis Shoemaker had a compatible device. That would be a ham radio. And I think the way it works, it's complicated to me. Mm-hmm. For some reason, my brain didn't want to do it. But I think the way it works is they basically find an empty radio channel and then they both broadcast the same time on that radio channel and then chat that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. I don't know. Yeah, it's just like a walkie-talkie that's a radio system. I think you just fill in the gaps.
Yeah,
I think
right.
You get it. It's not a telephone. It's sort of like a chat room and that whoever's on it, you can talk to.
Yeah, something, something. So yeah. After hearing about Mac and Muff's plans to live off the grid for a year or so in Palmyra, Shoemaker felt the one preparation Mac was lacking was someone to keep tabs on them in case of emergencies. And of course, Shoemaker wanted to keep tabs on his fabulous friend, and he mm-hmm. was just the person to do it. Shoemaker went to work convincing Mac to set up weekly check-ins with him.
Oh no, is Shoemaker going to be the one that gets murdered? And I don't know who's going to die in this. Do you? I was literally going to ask if you know.
Mac was not feeling it, right? He was not some dumb baby in need of help. He was a big, strong adventure man. But in the end, Mac agreed. They would make regular Wednesday night phone calls. So if Mac and Muff got into trouble, they'd have an advocate on the big island in Hawaii to help. Mm-hmm. And it would also be a way for Mac and Muff to relay messages to and from family. You know, like there wasn't a post office on Palmyra.
Right.
So after this line of communication was begrudgingly established, Mac and Muff were off flying over the water due south to Palmyra. 7 easy days of sailing later, on July 2nd, Mac and Muff slid into the crowded Palmyra Lagoon, shocked to see 2 other boats already camped out on their private island.
I was going to say, I feel like for as much as an expert Mac is supposed to be, he's always leaving right when there's a big storm, and now he's showing up to a place that's actually not deserted that he also thought was going to be deserted.
This is before the internet, man. He can't tell. You know, they just got to go.
Just quit being a Mac apologist, Muriel.
So Mac, he gets in this lagoon. He waves away the Yahoo and the dinghy.
Stupid buck.
inviting them to park at this congested docking area.
Isn't he saying his name is Waldo or something at this point?
It's Roy. Roy Allen is his name, yeah. So he's like, no, thank you. Get away from me, dude. And then he scours the shore for a remotely private place to drop anchor. He's really trying to stay out of that whole situation. Mm-hmm. So Mac chose a small cove just northwest from the other boats and pulled the Sea Wind into the wild bushes. Mac chose a small cove just northwest from the other boats and pulled the Sea Wind into the wild bushes. After the next few days, Mac threw himself into creating a whole Swiss Family Robinson setup. He might not have been on a completely deserted island, but he sure as hell was going to act like he was.
Just not talk to anyone.
He cleared the brush from the shore. He built a makeshift dock so he and Muff could walk to shore from their boat. He like rigged up his dinghies to ropes for easy access. Muff threw up a sunshade for superior dock lounging. They were really like pimping out this tiny cove that was all secluded.
Sure.
And after camp was set up, Mac went off. He was hacking through bushes with his machete, blazing trails, exploring old bunkers. He was motoring all around the lagoon, exploring the little islets, beating off sharks with his machete. Muff went out with Mac on one adventure, but she got lost in the jungle almost immediately, just outside their camp. And after screaming for help until she was sweaty, Muff decided she had had enough goddamn adventuring.
I'm just going to be chilling in this shade on this dock for the next 8 months. How long are they supposed to be there at this point?
6 months to a year was the plan. Meanwhile, the little Palmyra colony was developing. Down the shore from the Sea Wind's Cove were now 3 boats, all trying to carve out their slice of private island paradise. Just an hour or so after Mac and Muff arrived on the Sea Wind, Bernard and Evelyn Leonard arrived to Palmyra on the Journeyer.
It's too much. What's the mayor think about Mac and Muff? Are we going to get into all that?
They were all buddies. I mean, like everybody who meets Mac basically is just impressed by him.
Sure.
You know, he's embodying the spirit of what it means to be a yachtsman.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. I hate that you said yachtsman. It just, but anyways, I get what you're saying.
So by now, the sweet, innocent radio enthusiasts had departed. So Buck had snagged the Leonards. The Leonards dropped anchor right next to their new neighbors, Buck and Stephanie, on the Iola. Bernard Leonard was a skinny, proper man, a high school math teacher back on land, now free on his summer vacation. His wife, Evelyn, was pretty much the female version of Bernard, high cheekboned and accompanied by her lapdog, Windy. The Leonards were a bit thrown off by the hippies,
uh-huh.
the pot-smoking beatniks on their crazy town boat with its homemade mast, and their pack of wild dogs had a really big presence on the island.
Yeah.
The Leonards would watch the hippie woman spend hours hand-making coconut butter and then row her dinghy around from boat to boat trying to barter for more valuable food while the dogs barked on shore and the hippie men stalked around moodily on the shore. It was just a lot, right? It was very, what's going on over there? From her perspective, Stephanie was busy making friends with their new fancy neighbors on their big old boat. You know, Evelyn, she thought was kind of hot and cold, but their little dogs like to play with each other, and Leonard liked to swap books. So for her, she was like, that's fine. We're just doing our thing.
Yeah, I feel like Stephanie I feel like she's never met a stranger.
Yeah, right.
And everyone who is like, are you okay? Are you safe? She's just like,
yeah.
Thanks for giving a damn. I like your style.
Sounds awesome, man. And while the food bartering was entirely one-sided with Stephanie and Buck dominating the action, book swapping actually was not. Instead, book swapping was the great equalizer on Palmyra. The mayor, the Leonards, Mac and Muff, and Buck and Stephanie all freely swapped books and magazines. That was a pretty hot market.
Gotcha.
But the lopsided food bartering scene was starting to shape the social hierarchy of the island, right? Underlining the struggles of some and the affluence of others.
Uh-huh.
And sure, the obvious difference came in the shape of the yachts. Every yacht in the lagoon were these like large, pristine, seagoing yachts, except for the rickety Iola with its patchwork sails. But another more humiliating difference was the gap in practical skills. The island was teeming.
Buck and Stephanie like can't swim.
The island was teeming with edible fish, and it turned out the people with the most impressively full food pantries were also the best fishermen. For instance, Mac had easily cracked the code, right, of Palmyra. The fish on Palmyra responded well to trolling. That's just when you softly sort of move back and forth in a boat so the line drags behind the boat.
I actually know that.
I thought you might.
Yeah, we would go, that's how we went fishing on summer vacations with my dad.
Aww.
in like the lakes in Canada north of Seattle.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So this was something that a person with an outboard motor could achieve effortlessly. So Mac could be seen at all times quietly puttering back and forth across the lagoon, just tossing fish after fish into his dinghy.
That is rough.
Buck talked a great game when it came to fishing, but when it came down to it, Buck was actually a weak-ass fisherman. Not great problem-solving skills either. So he had already ruined his outboard motor, so he couldn't troll like Mac.
Uh-huh.
And with every fish that slipped through his fingers came anger, resentment, and hunger. After a day of failure, Buck would lumber aboard the Iola to make quote-unquote cookies, which we talked about before. I'm pretty sure they were just patties of staples just mashed together with something coconut.
Yeah.
I'm still dying to know what cookies were to this man. And it also became this exasperated end, like way to end a conversation with Stephanie. Like they'd be like, we have to do this, this, and this. And he's like, whatever, you know, man, I'm just going to go make some cookies. Go off, just eat their supplies.
It's just sand mushed together with whatever coconut butter they were able to.
He's not out there making something like I think you and I would want to eat. As failure permeated Buck and Stephanie's world, Buck became more withdrawn, which was frustrating for Stephanie because while Buck was having a mental spiral, Stephanie was spending her days hand processing coconuts for hours into something barterable and then slapping on a pleasant smile to go boat to boat trying to work in food swapping with the book swapping, all for food that Buck was going to turn into cookies and eat 90% of anyway, right?
Plus, she's starving, so she's losing all this weight, so she's also like popular in that way, you know? She's really doing her part to try to keep their, you know, social status.
It's really funny that you're saying that, because that kind of is, I was like, that's kind of terrible, but also we're on a diet right now. So
put me on an Atoll, baby.
You feel like Stephanie. That's what's happening. So the only boat they stayed away from at first was the Sea Wind. It and Mac and Muff were intimidating. The dock that Mac had just like built out of nowhere was super impressive. Their boat was perfect. And their move to anchor away from the others felt like they had basically put up a big old no trespassing sign. But while Stephanie and Buck hadn't been invited aboard the Sea Wind, that was not true of the mayor and the Leonards. While everyone was friendly, Mac, Muff, the Leonards, the mayor and his family tended to spend more time together, having nice dinners and chatting. They were all relatively the same age, a little older than Stephanie and Buck, sure. But it was hard to shake the feeling that Buck and Stephanie were
being excluded.
Yeah, because of their incessant bartering and crappy boat, right?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, what are they even bringing to the party?
Well, you know, coconut butter, man. I mean, you had this flock of middle-aged yachties eating ham out of a can and drinking sherry while Buck and Stephanie were eating busted-ass cookies while their dogs scavenged the beaches. However, despite the fact that Buck and Stephanie had yet to receive an invite to board the Sea Wind, Mac freely shared his plentiful fish with them. That was an act of noblesse oblige, you know, something you would do to ingratiate yourself into the island.
Yeah, or just, yeah, make sure those people aren't going to rob us in the middle of the night. Like, give them some fish. They're obviously starving. They're clearly crazy. I bet you $1 million are running from the law. Just give them fish and keep them so they're not desperate.
You know, and I think their real deal is it's not that, and it's not what I said. I think he's just a super friendly guy, and he was a really good fisherman. And
yeah, but he's not friendly enough to bring him on board and, like, invite him over to dinner to have some canned ham.
Yeah, well, you know. But he's friendly enough to not like use it for a chum, right? He's like, hey guys, got some fish. You want some fish? I know what you mean. I mean, what you're saying is what we'd hope that they were thinking. As the story unfolds, I'm not sure if they were really thinking that.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So the mayor and his family were leaving for Hawaii on July 6th. So the Palmyra colony handed over packs of letters to be mailed out to friends and family. That was something they did ritualistically, right? Not ritualistically.
Yeah, I said, like, what, they had a big, like, fire ceremony. Suddenly it's yellow jackets out here.
No, it's like something, anytime somebody departed, that was like a courtesy.
Yeah.
Another one of these.
You got any mail you guys want to send? You know what I mean? Get your cable bill sent in or whatever.
It's like this kind of yachting culture thing, right? Yeah, another one of those things.
Yeah.
So Mac's very first letter to his mother read in part, "The island is beautiful beyond my wildest hope. Everything is exciting, and I'm anxious to be off exploring. I hope to find some peace and quiet where a man can sit at leisure. Palmyra is everything I ever hoped for and more." Muff wrote that the old military infrastructure was now, quote, falling down, and what hasn't fallen down, vandals have torn down and destroyed. There are beds, mattresses, a fire engine, trucks, jeeps, all left over from the military, but everything is stripped like at a junkyard. It's sickening.
She's like, it's basically a landfill in the middle of the ocean. You guys heard of that big, all that plastic gathering up in the ocean? Well, just imagine the metal on an island, and that's what this is. It's trash.
She went on to say the other local inhabitants are land crabs, coconut crabs, hermit crabs, rats, tiny lizards, spiders, ants, roaches that fly and some that don't, mosquitoes fly, flies, and you name it. If it's creepy and crawly, it's here. This place is really a jungle. Mac is thrilled to be here at last, but I already miss all of you and our friends.
Oh, God.
So this is the first letter that she fired.
That's like week one. Yeah. No.
Well, without a parade or anything like that, the mayor and his family departed the island, dropping the population down now to 3 boats. And soon it was time to break the invisible barrier around the Sea Wind. Stephanie convinced Buck to join her, and the two rowed their dinghy across the crystal clear lagoon. And finally, in the rhythm of yachting culture, Stephanie held up her coconut butter with a smile, and Mac easily accepted the bargain, a couple of fat fish for some homemade butter. He then shouted the magic words, "Come aboard!" And Stephanie and Buck were properly introduced to the Sea Wind.
You started this whole thing with Buck and Stephanie surviving. There's going to be a double murder. That I just feel like Mac and Buff are going to get murdered.
Back in San Diego, Mac had gutted the cabin and rebuilt it by hand. The finished product was close to 10 feet longer than the original boat, and it was sparkling with hand-polished wooden boards and brass fixtures. And Muff, when they came down to see this incredible cabin, was already below deck pouring icy white wine into fancy stemware for their guests.
Yeah.
Now, the cabin of Buck and Stephanie's Iola was so small that Buck had to stay hunched over to keep from bumping the ceiling. They slept on a single bunk together in spoons. The only place to sit was this small little table with built-in benches. And like most yachts of the 70s, there was no refrigeration on the Iola at all. On the way down from Hawaii, they had to rub their eggs with Vaseline to keep them from spoiling. And the cabin...
Does that work?
I guess. That's the tactic. I hear you wash... If you don't wash eggs, like fresh eggs, then you can just keep them on the countertop. We have to keep them in the refrigerator in the States because our eggs are like chemically treated and washed. So like whatever coating that comes out with them, like... gets stripped away. But if you get fresh chicken eggs, you can leave them on the counter. So I'm assuming Vaseline does that. I don't know.
Cool. Weird.
Right. So no refrigerator, cramped spaces. I'm pretty sure the cabin probably smelled like burnt coffee and dogs. They were just, you know, it's not the hottest place.
Roaches. Just joints all snubbed out.
The Sea Wind's cabin was a completely different story. It was a glowing, beautiful space. The galley table was handmade. Mac and Muff had collected coins at all the ports from their honeymoon.
Of course they did.
And they had gone in and like cut little holes and inlaid the coins into the top of his tabletop and like perfectly varnished it. Every tiny fixture had been picked. So like artwork lined the walls and every usable object, dishes, kitchen gadgets, you know, a chessboard, everything had these perfectly hand carved spaces to honor it where it belonged.
Yeah, they Marie Kondo'd the hell out of everything.
Yeah, no space wasted and everything, what is it, sparks joy.
Yeah, everything sparks joy or? Yeah, sparks joy.
Yeah, everything is cherished and accounted for.
Sure.
The tour of the Sea Wind was concise and very practiced. Mac had done it hundreds of times. Just 20 minutes of hit after hit. Technical doohickeys, the inboard motor tour, the refrigerator show off, the radio, everything. The couples afterwards sat on overstuffed armchairs and drank rum and pineapple juice.
Ooh, that sounds good.
And Mac jumped around telling sailing stories. And Muff, even at that point, loosened up enough to join in. But it felt like the whole night was leading up to one point. Hey, how long are you and Buck planning on staying on Palmyra anyway?
Yeah.
So innocently, Stephanie's like, a long time.
How long does weed take to grow? I guess we should have known that by now. I don't know, 5 years?
We're growing a vegetable garden. Bartering's going gangbusters. She was like, we have got these hippie friends coming up in August. They're going to bring us all these supplies, man.
Plus, I'm not very smart, so every time I read a book again, it's like I've never read it before, you know?
They'd probably be here for years. And the look on Mac's face made Buck actually laugh. And then Mac countered that he and Muff also had plans to stay on Palmyra, man. Oh, yeah, at least a year. Uh-huh. Maybe more. After all, they had enough food and supplies to do whatever they wanted. And the shots were fired in the wiener measuring contest. I do want to also just add something.
Yes.
I'm making fun of Stephanie for maybe some of these choices, but I want to do, I do want to say, like, she's pretty bright. Like,
I know I made a joke that she's not smart also.
That's, it's not, it's like a different vibe. I don't think it's like, I mean, some of these choices, I just want to be like, I'll get done. I got done reading chapters and I was like, oh my God. Right. Like, it's choices.
Yeah.
But the whole thing where she was doing, like, navigating using those algorithms.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, out of the two of us, I feel like I feel like if we were at sea, maybe I would be less, like, scared than you.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you right now, I never would have figured that out.
Yeah.
I would have, we would have died at sea. I would have never been able to, if I was out there and, like, the math wasn't working, I would just be done.
No, you can't even look at a GPS and tell me if it's left or right.
No, I have to do my hand thing to see which one's the L, you know?
Yeah.
So July 16th, 1974.
Oh my God, I just thought of you trying to figure out the difference between north and south.
Girl,
and east and west.
I'm telling you, like, there's no way.
No, you can't
way.
Do that.
I'm saying, like, I think I'm, like, relatively smart. And I really, I, the stuff that she was able to do, she's also really good at chess. We'll talk about that in a second. But, like, I wouldn't be able to do any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
July 16th, 1974 was Stephanie's 28th birthday. At this point, Stephanie was living alone on the Iola with her dog Puffer, and Buck was living ashore with the big dogs. It only took a few weeks for the dogs and tiny bed and smells to help the couple realize their living situation was far beyond the pale on the Iola.
Yeah.
It was mutual and simple. Stephanie would absolutely not sleep on the island with the flying cockroaches, wharf rats, and foot-long dueling land crabs. Mm-hmm. And Buck couldn't even stand upright in the cabin, so they just did their thing. Buck found a tent and a cot in one of the old military bunkers, and he set up a decent camp. And then, of course, gave his large pit bull and Labrador free range of the island. Buck still routinely boarded the Iola to mow through the scraps of their food supplies, but the fishing thing was out the window.
No, he just gave up?
Pretty much. He wasn't interested in the stupid, impossible, emasculating task. Instead, they refocused on starting their weed farm.
Uh-huh. There we go. Back to basics,
man.
Yeah. You gotta keep that goal and visualize.
On the morning of Stephanie's birthday, the Leonards came to the Iola to say goodbye. This was mildly surprising because the Leonards had mentioned staying for most of the summer, and it was only mid-July. Things had chilled between Evelyn Leonard and Stephanie. During her latest bartering attempt, Evelyn snapped in that way that some people do when they've been polite for too long, even though no one asked them to.
Yeah.
Telling Stephanie that they had brought just enough food to meet their needs and they did not need another jar of coconut butter. But now... The Leonards were saying an early goodbye and happy birthday with armfuls of books, cooking oil, rice pudding, and a sack of flour.
Yeah. They're like, you guys ruined it. Have our flour. We're leaving now.
That night, with just two boats left in the lagoon.
Wait, so sorry. Did the Leonards cough up a reason? Do you know why they left? Did they leave because of Buck and Stephanie?
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little later.
Okay.
But at the time, they didn't cough up a reason, but everyone was like, that's odd.
Yeah.
And really, Muff was like begging them not to go. She was saying, please, please stay. Don't leave.
Like, don't leave us alone with them?
I mean...
Or she's just as miserable. She should have just
miserable.
Gone with them.
Yeah, right. She's miserable.
Okay,
I believe, don't quote me on this, but I think in one of the trial transcripts, Evelyn Leonard... said that they had offered to take her, and she said no, she couldn't.
Oh, so Mac and Muff are going to be the dead ones, huh?
I'm not telling you.
I know you're
happen.
Not. It's annoying, but what am I supposed to do? Not think about it?
Well, you can just think about it in your head.
Yeah, that's
so. That night, with just two boats left in the lagoon, Buck made Stephanie some sort of janky cake. And then afterwards, Mac and Muff came by with presents. Muff had roasted the couple some soybeans, and Mac, ever helpful, had actually gone out and fished the Iola's anchor out of the coral reef in the channel where they had originally crashed. So he had dived down and
found
her.
That's hilarious. He's just like solved all of his problems to such an extent that now he's going up and cleaning their mess from like weeks ago at this point.
Everyone that he meets in this boating world is like, you are literally the best.
Gotcha.
He's just that guy.
Yeah.
He's like on land when he's having to go to like a land thing.
Yeah.
He's a huge weirdo and like really uncomfortable. But like on these like docks in this life, people are just like, how are you?
Yeah. That's hilarious.
So there on the Iola in the afternoon light, the two couples had janky cake, birthday cake, and coffee and sang the birthday song. When the Leonards left, they, of course,
Shorty, it's your birthday. We go party like it's your birthday. Okay.
Too early, 70s. Okay.
I know. That's why it's funny, Muriel. That's why it's a bit.
When the Leonards left, they, of course, took another packet of mail and with it, a careful letter Muff wrote earlier to her elderly mother. Muff talked about the abandoned hospital that she and Mac explored out into the jungle, the constantly screaming birds. Like it sounded like a Disney ride or something. Just constant soundtrack of screaming birds.
A Disney ride? What kind of horror Disney ride?
Just something that's like loud enough to be like, oh, this is really what you're supposed to be hearing this whole time constantly.
Okay. Disney ride of your nightmares.
And she wrote about the hippie couple on Palmyra attempting to live off the land. Mm-hmm. She wrote, quote, Roy and Stephanie have run out of sugar, cigarettes, and I don't know what. They have bartered with other boats. Next, they will ask us. I pray they won't. Roy has a chainsaw that he uses to cut down trees so they can get to the coconuts easier.
Which they're not supposed to do.
No, the mayor said absolutely not. As soon as the mayor left, he literally strapped on his chainsaw and went to town. And then she said it makes Mac furious. Muff ended the letter, reminding her mother to send any letters to Kurt Shoemaker in Hawaii because they'd be calling soon for their weekly call. Now, with the mayor and the math teacher gone, Buck was really coming into his own, just full on shirtless, his buck tattoo on full display, using his chainsaw to hack down full grown coconut trees to get to those sweet, sweet coconuts, leaving the wood to rot. The dogs had free rein on the island and they were becoming more aggressive and hungry, essentially hunting.
Yeah.
And as the days wore on, things just started to become off kilter in paradise. On a machete hacking trailblazing project, Mac made a mistake and he sliced his knee open down to the bone.
See, put him on land. He can't do anything.
He was bleeding out. And even though this is like what's crazy about this, if you can picture it. The jungle is so dense outside the little coastal area.
Yeah.
Like you really can't hear anything. Like it's like if you're shouting to someone that's yards away, they can't even really hear you. And you can get into pockets of the jungle where birds, if you like stumble onto where they're hanging and they get startled, they just flap around and they can't get out. You know, if they're if they're panicked, then they can't get out either. That's how dense it is.
Right. So he cut himself in the middle of and no one could help him.
Right. So he was just yards away from the sea wind, but it was this really bad situation. He was bleeding pretty badly. So he decided it would take too long to walk the trail back, which is kind of windy, and decided instead to just hack his way straight through and got completely lost.
Oh.
So it's like this, what we talked about in the beginning, you know, you just have to be on point. So it's just a series of dumb mistakes, starting with carelessness and ending in panic. Mac did manage to get back to the sea wind. And, you know, then again, Muff tried to close the wound, but their sutures were old. They were left over from their honeymoon cruise and they disintegrated when Muff tried to use them.
What are they? Sutures?
Sutures, like the things you would use to like to put in stitches. It's not
a
like
needle?
It's
a fish hook?
Stop. It's like, because a suture is like what you would call the thread.
Oh.
But they're not using like straight up cotton thread.
Gotcha.
Yeah. anyway, they eventually managed to patch Mac up, but the whole ordeal left him in bed for days. It was pretty draining. And then one day, on her way to the bathhouse, Muff was stalked by Popolo, the pit bull. So she noticed the dog is following her.
Yeah.
And she's trying to kind of shout for Mac and figure out what to do. And the dog charged her. So Muff just starts screaming. And then at the very last minute, Buck just steps out of the bushes and commands Popolo to stop.
Popolo?
Mm-hmm. So Buck just ignored Muff completely. He didn't say anything about the dog or anything. He just silently walked away.
Oh.
You know, strapped with his chainsaw on his back on a mission to get some more coconuts.
Horrible.
Which were easier to catch than fish.
Mm-hmm.
Stephanie tried to get Buck to apologize. She chased him down.
Yeah.
And he just screamed back, "They don't own this goddamn island." He's like, "I don't have to apologize. I don't have to do anything." And I think it's interesting, this idea of, like, you know, a code of conduct in sailing,
yeah,
you know, motivates all this behavior. And yeah, now they're in this situation where you have somebody who is like, there is no code of conduct.
Right.
You know, what's what, like, that was never anything that was on his mind. And he's like, what? I don't have to do anything.
I feel like he's not going to murder them with the chainsaws. But that's, could you imagine if he did, though?
It's really horrible.
The Atoll Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay. So Mac recovered from his machete injury and continued to explore the island, and Muff just withdrew. She drank apple cider vinegar religiously, still trying to lose this weight, but she snacked every time she was alone and unhappy, which was all the time. And either that or she just slept on the boat. That's all she was doing.
Poor baby. And Mac's not even trying to, like, help her. He's just like, well, you signed up for this, babe.
Right. I think that it's just like they don't talk to each other,
yeah,
like that, you
care.
Know?
Yeah.
And I don't think she's being like, we're leaving now.
Yeah.
And she's saying, well, maybe, da da da. And he's just like, oh, you'll calm down.
Yeah.
But she just wanted to leave. She was, you know, unnerved by everything. She was unnerved by the, like, ominous way that night fell, you know, because they were so close to the equator. There wasn't really a sunset, so night fell like a curtain, and if there was a new moon or it was cloudy, it was just pure black, you
Whoa.
Know, and screaming Disneyland birds.
The old Magic Mountain effect.
Over in the Buck and Stephanie camp, they had too many pressing issues to feel the relentless island ennui.
Mm-hmm.
Stephanie, of course, was bearing the brunt of worrying and planning for the future and doing the practical work, the grind of survival. The plan all along was to plant the gardens, but more importantly, the fields of pot. But here's the ball kicker. Guess how much soil is on a coral reef island? Just go ahead and guess.
Quarter inch.
None. Right. Like, it was 3 inches deep in the best spots.
Yeah, right.
And the ground was crawling with things like crabs and rats and all kinds of things that love to eat the tender shoots of plants. So it turns out, especially, they love to eat marijuana seedlings. So they would try to sprout them in paper cups and then come back and they would just be completely eaten.
Unreal.
So Stephanie spent hours hunting the island, scraping inches of soil from around the palm tree roots and then loading them into a cart. And then she would haul all the dirt she could find down to the refrigerator house, like an old sort of building where they had a functioning refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
And
at one point, not anymore.
It actually works as long you can hook a generator up to it.
Okay.
So they were using it for, like, freezing things and keeping things.
Oh, cool.
But she would bring everything down because they had decided they were going to create a rooftop garden on the roof of the refrigerator house.
That makes sense. That's
pretty smart.
Good. Smart for them.
So Buck's job was to hang out on the roof spreading dirt, while Stephanie had the backbreaking job of dirt collecting. And we're actually talking like hundreds of cartloads of dirt
right
on the
island. Of course, yeah.
While she wasn't hauling dirt, Stephanie spent her time hand-making coconut butter, scavenging for food, finding ways to stretch the dog food, cleaning the boat, washing laundry by hand, just sun up to sundown working. And the struggle wasn't just physical. She was having trouble managing Buck. it seemed like island life had basically just made him way more aggressive and hostile. And, you know, for her part, she thought maybe this is too hard for him. Maybe he's not dealing with hunger very well. You know, maybe it's because there's nothing left to keep him in check. Who knows, right? They were in agreement, though, that the garden needed to be completed, but for different reasons. Stephanie was thinking about food, and Buck was thinking about pot. By Stephanie's calculations, they had about a month of food left on the Iola if they could pull together enough island food to stretch it, right? Like, they were eating, just to be, like, fair, mm-hmm. It was actually a lot of food on the island. Like, I think that it was kind of annoying to process, hard to catch, you know, that sort of thing. But, like, there were tons of crabs. There were tons of fish. There were birds. There were eggs. Uh-huh. And there were also a lot of edible leafy greens.
So, man, I've seen Alone and Survivor. You can also eat rats.
You can totally eat rats. And you can eat, like, hearts of palm. If you're not, you know, the little trees, you can just cut down and open up. And there's hearts of palm. You can make salads. Like, there's a lot of food on the island. But they were running out of the food that they wanted to eat and the food that was easiest to access. Anyway, she thought, okay, if we can pull enough island food to stretch it, we can last about a month. If the Taylor brothers didn't show up in August with supplies, her backup plan was to go to one of the neighboring islands to buy more food. Before he left, the mayor told Stephanie nearby Fanning Island had like a couple of permanent residents and a general store. And this is interesting because, you know, it's pre-internet days. Uh-huh. So they're just looking at a map and they're like one speck on a map and there's some other specks, know, and she's like, is this somewhere we can go? And the mayor just knows. And he's like, oh, that place, there is no channel. It's just a coral, like atoll. So you can't get inside. But Fanning has, you know, this more substantial population.
Right. He's like, it's an easy sale. They're like, great. Yeah, we'll be there in 19 days.
Well, actually, it was about 175 miles away, which was fairly close, but it was against the wind. So almost impossible for a sailboat with a ruined motor, right? In the mayor's opinion, the safest bet for them, the thing that would probably kill them the least, was to sail to American Samoa because there were favorable winds and currents the entire way. Mm-hmm. And then once they get there, they can get a motor, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is American Samoa is about 1,000 miles south of Palmyra. So a 2,000-mile round trip altogether, that would be twice the distance back to Hawaii.
Yeah.
That seemed super bonkers to Stephanie. So her plan was, forget what the mayor says. We're going to sail upwind to Fanning. They had no money left. So Stephanie was hoping to sell Mac their portable generator. And then maybe they could pick up some short-term work on Fanning Island for extra cash so they could buy supplies. Mm-hmm.
They should sprout these little weed seedlings in the little cups and take them there and say, hey, look, we've sprouted these weed plants, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I don't think you're wrong, but there is something about that that also doesn't seem like a good plan. On Fanning, they would buy staples, rice, beans, flour, sugar, an outboard motor to replace the one that Buck had ruined. As for Buck, his master plan was to grow a nice crop of dope to get rich by spring. On the 22nd of July, another boat came through, the Shearwater, with two guys, Bill Larson and Don Stevens. Buck rowed out to meet them as soon as they passed through the channel and again guided them straight to the slot next to the Iola, right next door to Buck and Stephanie. The Shearwater guys were from Portland, Oregon, and had just finished up their tour through the South Pacific Islands and were headed back to Hawaii. So they were on the last leg of their journey. The next day, Buck and Stephanie were invited on board the Shearwater for rum and cokes and peanuts. Buck managed to bum two packs of cigarettes off the Palmyra newbies.
Nice.
Didn't know what they were doing, walking into. On the 25th, so a couple days later, Stephanie and Buck held a potluck dinner for everyone on the island, something they wouldn't do with just Mac and Muff, but with a third boat, social graces allowed it. Stephanie had used a classic Palmyra bartering tactic with the Shearwater, so that would be to ask for supplies and then offer to do some baking to share in return. So she'd be like, give me a little flour, I'll make two loaves of bread and then give you one loaf back.
Gotcha.
Stephanie got some flour and sugar and stuff from the Shearwater guys. And then with the supplies she had left, some nuts and dried fruit and garlic, she came up with a bunch of different breads and a pudding pie. The Grahams brought kind of an interesting offer, steamed potatoes and carrots, generous in that it was the last of their fresh produce from Hawaii, but definitely not a super sexy party food. Seemed like kind of like a little bit of a power move on the Grahams' part to me. The Shearwater guys really turned it up the hardest with a canned ham and a full bottle of rum. They were on their way home anyway, and the Palmyra folks looked like they needed some luxury.
Yeah.
The potluck was fun, but still a disguised bumming of things, which had gotten more and more blatant. Buck wouldn't even speak to Muff, by the way, when they walked past each other anymore on the island, but he was still coming by the Grahams' place to like ask for tobacco and rolling papers. Mm-hmm. So it was just a constant thing with them. But tonight was about fun. Buck set up a record player and they listened to music while Mac and Buck played chess. Stephanie was actually much better at chess than Buck and had even beat Mac once or twice. But she decided to leave the guys and sit near the fire with Muff to maybe get some girl bonding in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm editorializing a little bit here, but I'm sure in some ways these older women were kind of hard for Stephanie to read, right? Because Stephanie's like an eternal optimist, like easy with forgiveness, a go with the flow gal. Muff and Evelyn Leonard were maybe more complicated or just different, right? Both friendly and irritated with Stephanie, maybe frustrated she couldn't pick up on the cues of polite society. It seems like for Stephanie, she just took everything at face value and didn't get things like someone could agree to barter or invite her onto the boat while internally gritting their teeth at the whole situation.
You know? Yeah, she just doesn't realize that everyone's annoyed by her.
Right. And so Stephanie was super thrown off her guard when quiet Muff just spilled her guts across the campfire. With Mac just a few yards away, Muff let it rip in a voice just above a whisper. She never wanted to leave San Diego. She was miserable. She was lonely. She missed their beautiful life on shore. She regretted leaving her elderly mother. So like her family was there and her sisters were taking care of her mom. But, yeah, you know, those could be her last years. She totally doesn't know, you know. And she had actually been begging Mac to leave the island. So damn, right? That's all out of left field. And Stephanie had issues with Buck that she wasn't even really letting herself stay out loud, let alone to another person. Mm-hmm. They were in this surprisingly similar position, both women staying quiet to keep the peace in this escalating situation. But the problem was Stephanie's thing was just too heavy. She wasn't just dealing with frustrations in a marriage or sucky communication skills. Buck was a fugitive, and Stephanie knew this cloak of girl talk wouldn't protect her from the consequences of revealing her secrets.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment just fizzled out. Stephanie said something generically supportive. Muff sort of pulled herself back together. And Muff might have even felt relief looking at Stephanie's bland, sort of like, everything's going to be fine, smile, you know, believing maybe her raw emotions didn't even register in Stephanie's pot-addled hippie brain.
You know? I love this editorializing, whatever that word is. You did good. That was cool.
The Shearwater only stayed on Palmyra for like a couple days. And when they left, as was the custom, they took a pack of letters with them from the longer-term Palmyra residents. Mac wrote his sister Kit basically a love letter to Palmyra, but with small disappointment sneaking in this time.
Okay.
The first, of course, being the hippies cramping their style and mostly, he says, freaking out Muff. And the second being the sharks. He had to carry his machete with him anytime he motored around the lagoon in his dinghy. The black tips were just super aggressive. And when they charged the boat, he'd have to beat them off with the machete.
Crazy. That's like enough to leave. Like, I'm just like, oh, you know, we came to this place. It's beautiful. It's really interesting. And the hippies are there and my wife is miserable. But the real reason we're leaving is because the sharks are always trying to kill us.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It made exploring really, really hard. And it kept Muff from enjoying the water. She was like, I'm not doing that on any level.
Yeah, of course.
Stephanie wrote her third, at this point, secret letter to her mother, mostly a sunshine and roses letter. They made it to their undisclosed island. She hadn't died at sea, and she was happily eating fish and coconuts. Muff wrote to friends back in San Diego. The letter this time was completely a rant about Stephanie and Buck, the hippie couple. They were hard at work trying to grow pot and mooch food off of other boats, their version of quote-unquote living off the land. The Shearwater sailed off to Hawaii on August 1st. The Shearwater guys were in agreement about their impressions. The women seemed miserable. And as for the men, Mac was just awesome. Super impressive overall as a sailor and adventurer. And Buck just honestly seemed like a huge asshole and kind of a wild card.
Yeah.
During their stay, actually, one of them had called Buck out about the tattoo. Because remember, he's telling everybody he's Roy Allen.
Yeah.
And he made a joke about like, man, we really don't know who you are, right?
Uh-huh.
And Buck expertly covered this potentially blown cover by silently scowling at the Shearwater guys until the conversation awkwardly died. Really nailed that one.
Yeah, just pulling out his chainsaw.
On Wednesday, August 7th, Mac and Muff had their regular chat with the Shoemakers over the radio. It was a whole production. You know, like Mac didn't have an FCC license, so he was contacting Shoemaker through the call letters of one of Shoemaker's ham radio buddies, and they were, you know, they're doing this whole thing. There's a wall of static, and then, you know, repeat KH16G calling 784, you know, like that kind of stuff. So there's a complicated protocol to the exchange. Letters from home or traffic was read before any chit chat. They were very like by the book as to how this thing was supposed to go. Everyone back in San Diego was fine. Nixon was going to resign. Huge bummer for Mac and Muff. And finally, no word from the Taylor brothers with Stephanie and Buck's long-awaited supply delivery. Now, Mac had offered Buck and Stephanie a channel of communication through Shoemaker. They would write letters to the Taylor brothers, hand them off to the ships departing from Palmyra with the idea that the brothers would respond by writing to Shoemaker, who would then call Mac with any news on the ship-to-shore radio. Many letters had gone out, but unfortunately, the Doobie Brothers were MIA, and the clock was ticking. And that's where we're going to pick up next week.
I love that they're like, man, they're going to bring us all these supplies. They're also supposed to trade for weed. They're supposed them weed. They're like, they're just like,
the crabs ate the weed, man. What do you want me to do? There's no soil, man. Why didn't we know that?
Like, and it's not deserted, and it's actually not even an island.
It's not even an island, man.
Honestly, not sure if Muriel said that's where we're going to pick up next week or next episode.
I did say it. I was hoping you
next week.
Get
okay,
it.
Great. Go listen to part four right now of the Palmyra Atoll murders. Thank you for listening. Muriel did all the research and the writing. I did all the post-production and editing. I don't have our outro script pulled up, so we can just freestyle this, Muriel.
Great. Just to help support the podcast and unlock exclusive episodes, you can sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/Muriel's Murders. There's another very fun island episode on there right now about a murder on the Galapagos Islands.
Yeah, and there's like 30 other, I think more, 31 or more other true crime episodes up there for you.
Yeah, you can hear us. We also did an episode about failing making a vision board.
Yeah, we recently attempted. We do once a month. We do an episode that's not true crime, and those are really fun and only available on Patreon. Hey, our music is by Mario Castellini. Find him on Instagram at Castellini Beats.
Yeah, and if you like this series, go ahead and share it with people. You can text it, like just tap on it and send it.
Yeah,
and be like, "Hey, mom, listen to this podcast. It's awesome."
Yeah, you know, you can connect with all your long-lost loved ones by showing them this podcast. Think about that. That's what we're really aiming to do, to build bridges and mend fences. Okay, we love you guys.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye.